and cauterizing the damage with an uneven blackness. Closer still, and Lannery could see that this blackness was a layer of twisted metal and melted panels, the damaged structure propped by giant buttresses of gray rock and thick, roughly formed stanchions. The repair work seemed slapdash and haphazard, but Greenwood Station's business was tech, not construction, and its specialization was war. She held up a hand and paused by a lake of sickly yellow water. Greenwood Station took up half of their view, and this close, Lannery was wary of guards or security droids.
"I want to go home,"
Tree said, voice muffled.
"We'll be inside soon," Lannery said. "It's huge."
She knew how large the domes were, of course. She'd seen the remains of those bombed by the Jedi, and had viewed many hollows during her time at Padawan Kesh. But being this close to Greenwood Station brought its true size home to her. The brief research she carried out on her way here meant nothing to seeing it herself. Knowing that it was a space enclosed by one huge dome had perhaps given it limitations in her mind's eye. But the truth was, this was a city. More than 8 kilometers across, the dome structure rose sharply from the ground and then curved gently toward the pinnacle, a place out of sight that was supported by a giant tower. This interior tower housed the city's ruling council, business owners, and other elite. Spread out from its base for more than 3 kilometers in every direction were the factories, transport roads and canals, habitation blocks, and leisure parks of this massive manufacturing city. Countless chimneys pierced the dome and rose higher, all of them spewing smoke and steam that billowed southward.
"The thought of being inside that is no comfort,"
Tree said.
"So, do we just knock at one of the gates?"
"No, we sneak in."
"Through the scar,"
Tree said.
"How do you know they call it that?"
Tree shrugged.
"I thought it was common knowledge."
More and more suspicious of Treesana, Lannery led the way toward the smashed span of dome. Though the bombing had been almost 12 years before, the rubble and remains were still scattered over a wide area. The dome's survivors had repaired the breach and sealed the damaged area, but no one had seen any need to clear the ruins. It seemed that anything outside the boundary of Greenwood Station was irrelevant. There were defensive positions across the dome's curved surface. Lannery could see pulse cannons and plasma mortars nestled in indentations in the structure, but she did not believe the positions were manned. She had heard of skirmishes between manufacturing domes, sometimes concerning resources or business, other times over causes unknown. But Greenwood Station was now so isolated by the ruins around it that it usually worked in peace.
"We'll climb up there," she said,
indicating a path that rose through the debris.
"Hopefully there'll be airlocks through the structure."
"Good,"
Tree said.
"Let's move. My skin's on fire and my leku are itching."
They climbed an uneven mountain of debris, shattered rock, twisted remnants of structural material, and some opaque sections of the dome's shell that had been blasted and half-melted. The transparent material was almost as thick as Lannery was tall, and the shattered fragments were sometimes 30 meters across. Soon they were inside the perimeter of the ruined section of dome. The going got tougher, as the ruin became more confused, with fallen buildings mixed with melted rock and jagged sculptures of distorted material. Pools had formed here and there, some of them covered with such thick layers of ash and dust that they resembled solid ground. Lannery had to pull Tree out of one pool, and he started shivering, soaked to the waist in rancid water.
"There,"
Lannery said at last, pointing to a cliff of fused dome and metal.
"What?"
"Airlock,"
she force-probed, sensed no one.
"I don't think it's guarded. Come on."
The airlock only became obvious when they were 10 steps away. Lannery lifted her hand and tried to gesture the door aside. She grimaced and concentrated harder, and the door finally obeyed with a tortured whine. It can't have been used very much. She was aware of Tree watching her with a mixture of fascination and fear of her talents, but she did not acknowledge his attention. Air whooshed past them, and they entered, Lannery closing the door behind them. Pressures equalized. Several small lights came on, and the air cleared, and then a fine mist sprayed all over them. Decontamination complete, Lannery waved open the inner door. She readied herself for confrontation. If there were guards beyond the door, the questions would come thick and fast, and she would dip into the guards' minds, confusing them for long enough to put them out of action. She had no wish to kill anyone else unless she had to. But she would not hesitate if it meant getting one step closer to Dale. And stopping him, of course. That was her mission. Sometimes she had to remind herself that this was not simply a search for her long-lost brother. But there were no guards beyond the door, and no indication that this entrance was even monitored. A dilapidated corridor with flickering lights led away from the airlock, and they followed until they reached another door. They removed their masks, and Lannery hid them as well as she could above a loose ceiling panel.
"This must have all been built after the bombing," Tree said. "I heard that Greenwood Station's council sanctioned the murder of a Jedi for every 100 city inhabitants killed in the attack."
Lannery was aware of the series of assassinations that went on for 2 or 3 years after the Despot War. Rangers were lured into traps and killed. Diplomatic missions attacked. And even on Tython, there had been deaths.
"They lost about 2,000 here," Tree continued.
"You're knowing more and more about this pit," Lannery said. "Makes me wonder whether you have business interests here I should take notice of."
"No interests."
"But you've done business here."
"Only by necessity."
She rounded on him.
"Then do me a favor, Twi'lek. Let me conduct my business with no more talk of the past."
Tree smiled in apology and inclined his head. "Come on," she said. "We're wasting time." They worked their way through a series of roughly built corridors and halls, all deserted and stinking of disuse. Lannery remained alert, and was more aware than ever of the comforting weight of the sword beneath her robe. The air became heavier. The taint of burning grew, and a hint of hot metal, and the sweeter smell of something perfumed the air, as if added to